Today is Monday, March 4th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. Super Tuesday is looming as former President Trump still commands a massive lead. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us as well, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. We'd love to hear from you. Joining me now to get through the news with Cray, Billy Hallowell, on this Monday edition of the Quick Start Pod. Billy, we've got a lot going on, a lot to get to. On the focus story, we're taking a look at Sudan.
Yeah, we are. We're taking a look at the slavery situation there. It's kind of crazy. We'll get into the details in one man's really, really interesting faith journey.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to the details there. On the main thing, over half of Americans now believe that earning a four-year college degree isn't worth the cost. Madison Seals dives into the details there on that changing dynamic. All that's coming up. Don't forget, before we head to the news in 90 seconds here, to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts. We got DC Debrief with John Stolness, weekly roundup of the happenings in DC, and Billy's got Newsmakers, full-length interview each and every weekday. Don't miss those podcasts. You can sign up in the description. We've got the links there to this podcast episode. All right, housekeeping out of the way, let's head over to the news here in 90 seconds. Well, Super Tuesday is tomorrow. Voters in 16 states are heading out and to the polls. It's the biggest primary election of the 2024 cycle. And this is Nikki Haley's most likely last shot here to gain traction against former President Trump. Or most probably she'll drop out afterwards if it does not go her way. Haley's campaign did launch a seven-figure national cable and digital ad buy to run at least through tomorrow. Her campaign has also been heading around the country in the last few days here ahead of the primary to see as many voters as possible. Haiti's government declared a state of emergency yesterday after thousands of inmates apparently escaped from its largest prison during a surge of gang violence that has really rocked this nation for the last couple of months. The government cited the deterioration of security, notably around Port-au-Prince, and increasingly violent criminal acts perpetrated by armed gangs, including kidnappings and killings of citizens and violence against women and children and looting. A Texas surgeon faces a federal investigation after exposing transgender procedures being done on children after the hospital said they stopped doing them. Dr. Ethan Haim told CBN News that no medical professional should engage in what he calls barbaric transgender procedures. You can read the full story from CBN's Lori Johnson over at cbnnews.com. Billy, there's a couple things going on here. I just wanted to touch and really for a prayer point for Haiti, because a few years ago, I went there and did some reporting on some things going on in Haiti, a missionary that was working there. There were a lot of story angles that we covered, and This nation is just, the poverty there is stunning. And then whenever they do make advancements, this unstableness, this just really lack of any sort of control at times is just, it's debilitating. And the corruption there is debilitating. And I mean, they really just need prayer, because the people are great there. They're just going through so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking, you know, the history of these things. And it makes me think, gosh, you know, we have our problems in America.
Yeah.
And not that we don't need to be concerned, but you look at a country like this with historically so much pain and suffering, you know, even from the earthquake down the line, the things that have happened, you know, in recent years, it's just, we need to be praying for them and praying that they can get a stable government, because it seems like, you know, we're just here. We're so used to having that stability, right, in our government. Even again, when we complain about things that aren't good, nothing compares to what these poor people are going through there.
No. And when you travel around and you go to some of the more remote areas, it really feels like the Wild West. It really does. Now, and I haven't been there in a few years, and I heard there were some improvements on the roads and things like that. But then as soon as that happened, the corrupt players in there that control a lot of things didn't like that. And then you see this violence peak up. And then, you know, we had a leader killed. And I mean, the whole thing is just, it's pure chaos down there at times, and sounds like it is right now. So they definitely need our prayers. There's a lot of solid Christians down there in the midst of all the chaos as well. And just for all the people in general, right? This is a situation that is unlike most other countries in the entire world. And it's really heartbreaking. So definitely need to be praying for the people of Haiti. All right, we are going to head over to the focus story now. Another country we need to be praying for is in Sudan. And a Christian nonprofit is helping bring these Sudanese slaves to freedom. I mean, it's crazy to think that there's even slavery at this point. So what's going on here?
Yeah, this is, you know, Christian Solidarity International. We've covered them quite a bit. We've had Joel Veldkamp, their head of international communications, on the show. And they're doing things all over the world. But in South Sudan, it's really a crazy situation. They have actually been able to free 1,500 Sudanese slaves. And again, as you were saying, it's like, wow, we're living in 2024. How is it possible that slavery is still going on? Just last year, they freed 1,500 Sudanese slaves. Over the past 30 years, CSI has helped free 100,000 slaves. So all of this really goes back to issues that started in war. Today, we sort of have two countries. We have Sudan and South Sudan. And I think a lot of us don't know this, so the history is kind of helpful. In the 1980s and 1990s, it was just one country. It was called Sudan. And that country, like many others, was split by a civil war between the north, which is mostly Muslim and dominated by Arabs, and then the south, which was mostly Christian and Black African. And so the Muslim government in the north, after that splintering and civil war, started to use slavery as a weapon of war. And they used it against the South and started capturing people during that conflict. Now, the conflict that started in the 80s, 90s, it ended in 2005. And yet here we are 20 years later almost. And many of those slaves that were taken are still stuck in these horrific slavery situations up in the north. And so that's just a little bit of a quick backstory on it.
Yeah, really, really tragic. So Joel Veldkamp is head of international communications at CSI, and he shared one man's faith journey that really moved him. And this is kind of indicative of what you see over there. What can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, one of the things in this slavery situation is people are faced into sexual violence. You know, they're separated from their families. They're forced into Islam. And that's what happened to this one man. Joel said that he was old enough, you know, to know that he was enslaved and he didn't come from a Muslim background, but he wasn't old enough to know anything about Christianity. So he was forced out of his Christian faith, right? So imagine being taken as a child, brought into this other country at this point because of the civil war, and then forced into Islam. He grew up in slavery, being forced to learn the Quran, go to Islamic school at night, and then work during the day. And he was always told that he was a Muslim. And he was always even forced to pray like a Muslim. I mean, that was part of this slavery. And yet he always resisted that identity that was imposed on him. You know, he always secretly kind of resisted it. And when he finally found freedom, and it's kind of crazy how they secure their freedom too. It's a whole system that involves this cattle vaccine and trading people for the cattle vaccine. That's how CSI is sort of involved in this. But this guy ends up exploring his Christian faith heritage that he had been deprived of. And Joel said, you know, when he came back to South Sudan, he had the chance for the first time to learn after his freedom what it actually meant to be a Christian. And when he learned the Jesus story, he told Joel, you know, the Jesus story is way better than anything else. He was like, Jesus came and he gave himself for the world and he doesn't force anyone to follow him, right? And you think about, here's this guy who's been forced to be in Islam and forced to do these things. And he's finding that in Christianity and his freedom, getting back to his heritage, understanding that Jesus doesn't force anyone to worship him. He just loves us. And Joel said those comments really struck him because he reflected on his own experience, right, growing up in the West and a Christian household, and just taking that for granted, taking the biblical story for granted when he kind of failed to meditate on it. And then he was like, look, seeing the beauty of this guy's encounter with Christianity after being in slavery, it just showed him the power of, you know, of the Bible and of Christianity's redemption and love story. And so, just a powerful, powerful example of what freedom really looks like.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, it's just, again, it's hard to fathom what it's like to live in an area like that, that has gone through so much turmoil in the past few years and is still going through all this turmoil right now. And it just reminds me of the power of God's word and God's promises and the truth of the gospel and how that brings people to faith because of things like that. There's so many different aspects to God's salvation that bring us to faith, and the ways he does it, it's just so remarkable. And then this one, to see that, that's one I hadn't thought of, to where people wouldn't, they would see the difference between a false religion and what is being foisted upon them, and it would become illuminated just by seeing those differences. That's really powerful.
It is. Yeah. And for Joel, it was powerful to kind of think, man, I've here I am with my faith taking it for granted, sort of like ho-hum. And this guy is being illuminated by having that opportunity to see the truth.
Absolutely. Hopefully that spurs us all on to a greater faith and greater zeal for our faith. So definitely appreciate you bringing that one to the podcast today, Billy. We're going to head over to the main thing now. And over half of Americans now believe that earning a four-year college degree isn't worth the cost. That's compared with 40% a decade ago. Cherise Trump is the executive director of Speech First and talked with Madison Seals about what's behind the disenfranchisement with higher education and how students can take more of a responsibility for their future. That's today's main thing.
We live in a time when most Americans doubt that college is worth the cost of attendance, according to a Wall Street Journal poll from last year. And data from the U.S. Department of Education's College Scorecard shows that attendees of one in four higher education programs are earning less than the median annual income of $32,000 for high school graduates. Cherise, how is this affecting the number of students who are pursuing higher education?
I think this generation on campuses right now is increasingly disillusioned to a number of things. They feel like they've been basically sold a false bill of goods. You know, they are regularly being lied to, being told that if you get a four-year degree, that is a guarantee for, like, that starts your career. That is your career launch. And that is a prerequisite for your career. However, you're seeing a huge number of this generation actually pursuing, instead of going to college, pursuing entrepreneurial degrees. And I think this has a lot to do with the cost and then the payout at the end, right? So the students are starting to look at this as, is it worth the investment? I mean, you're coming out of college with upwards of $40,000 to $250,000 in debt in your early 20s. And colleges are not lowering their costs based on the economic downturn or any kind of recession trends. And it's because they are getting these government subsidies of federal student loans. So they have no incentive to lower the costs, and they're increasingly starting to behave more like companies trying to make money off of their clientele instead of educational institutions. And they're prioritizing things that are costing a lot of money that have no contributable effect on students' education, like DEI initiatives. And yeah, there are numbers showing that there is lower attendance for this generation. They're starting to go to trade schools. Again, they're starting to pursue entrepreneurial paths, such as starting their own businesses, doing YouTube channels, starting TikTok channels. And I think a lot of that comes from why bother getting that far into debt if it's not going to start me off at a career where I can actually have upward mobility? And you're seeing this study was 10 years out from a degree. And now these ones are showing which students are at or below the poverty line 10 years out. First of all, that's just insane. When you're thinking of like a college degree, you shouldn't be at a poverty level. But that's not even including the number, whatever percentage of students 10 years out can pay off, still have debt, still can pay off their student loans, still can have a decent lifestyle. I mean, 10 years out, you're having a family, kids, you want to own property. Can you do that 10 years out if you're not even making over $50,000 a year?
Right. Yeah. And all those ways that you just mentioned paint this picture that higher education is so disconnected from the current needs of students and the economy and so many other ways. And it's important to note that the income data covers all higher education attendees, including those who graduated, which is about 64%, and those who dropped out. And dropouts are three times as likely to default on their student loans as other students. But I think the dropout rate highlights an even larger problem with higher education than just the cost of it. Why do you think that higher education is seemingly starting to mean less and less?
Well, I think it's two things. I think there are probably a subset of students who drop out because about halfway through they realize the cost is not worth what they're getting out of the product. And they don't feel like this is going to lead to a prosperous life. I've actually met a number of Gen Z college dropouts who have instead decided to pursue careers in starting, you know, crypto companies or starting technology companies. They're like, look, I'm too smart for this. I don't need to spend this kind of money. I could just go do what I want to do now. And then they drop out. Now, the other group that you're talking about that default on their loans and drop out because they actually are not prepared for college, I think that's what it is. It's exactly that they actually shouldn't have been in college at all. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands of students who are not prepared for college. They're graduated from high school in order to meet so that the high schools can actually meet their graduation rates in order to continue to get money from the counties and the states. But they actually probably shouldn't have been graduated from high school. I think I was reading an article last year that said, we're talking about It was focused specifically on New York, but 60% of their community college students and 40% of their undergrads at four-year universities had to take remedial classes before they could even get started on their regular classes at school. And again, keep that in mind, that's taxpayer-funded remedial classes, that's student loan-based and remedial classes. So these students aren't actually being prepared for college, and they're struggling. And especially when we're talking about minority students who are graduated from high school in order for these high schools to meet certain diversity requirements for them to continue to receive funding, that's why we're seeing a huge number of students dropping out who can't pay off their loans because they weren't properly prepared for college. They weren't properly prepared for even a high school education. And now they're just kind of left in the wind at the whims of whatever social mobility program they can rely on.
Yeah. And amidst extreme loan payments that take years to pay off, there's kind of this false sense of freedom that comes with the idea of student loan forgiveness. But in most cases, it's not as great as it sounds, especially for the broad majority of students who are pursuing higher education. And Biden has now wiped away nearly $138 billion in federal student loans for almost 3.9 million borrowers. And aside from the negative economic impact and dangerous precedent of working around the Supreme Court and Congress, could this have any negative implications for student borrowers who maybe assume that their debt will be forgiven?
Absolutely. There's a certain group of students, a subset of students who are going to specifically enroll in college with the assumption that their debt's going to be forgiven. And of course, they're going to be completely disenfranchised when they realize the reality of that is what Biden can do at most, assuming he gets reelected, is forgive a fraction of their debt. Because there are so many students in debt, we're talking trillions of dollars here. This is the size of entire countries' GDPs. So this is not an amount that the United States can actually fully afford to forgive. So it's only going to be a fraction or a small percentage. And of course, the taxpayers are going to be stuck holding the bill for that as well. And let's remember, our math and science proficiencies are at a national decline. And so when we don't have education systems that are prioritizing these proficiencies, when students still can barely read by the time they get to college, and Biden and the left is still talking about forgiving student loans, there's really no incentive, again, for the universities to lower costs, to shift priorities, to focus more on the needs of the nation and of the student bodies. You know, if we're going to talk solutions, one of the main solutions, and I think DeSantis probably started talking about this when he was doing his education bills, is the colleges should be held accountable. They should lose federal funding if there isn't a certain percentage of their students that can actually show that they're contributing to the economy and being able to enter the workforce at a productive level. It wouldn't be too difficult, instead of forgiving student loans, for the Biden administration or any presidential administration to ask the Department of Education to start investigating these schools and auditing them and hold them accountable for what they're charging versus what the payout is, and actually hold them accountable for false advertising too, because they're telling these kids that they can get a degree in dance art and that they'll be fine. When I was that age, I wasn't going through my credit history and balancing my checkbook. I was just trying to have a good time in college. So, you know, a lot of these students are not read up on what the realities of the situation are, and they think they can get these ridiculous degrees in like feminist studies or whatnot and actually expect some sort of upward mobility, and that's just not the reality at all.
So what would you tell students to keep in mind when they're looking and choosing a higher education program?
I mean, I certainly would encourage students to wait to go to college. Going in at 18, that was kind of a narrative that was pushed pretty hard with the Gen X and the millennial generations, that you cannot get a decent job or have a decent lifestyle unless you go to a four-year degree program. And that is just not true. I mean, you see trades like electricians and plumbers making upwards of six figures a year and starting their own companies and becoming millionaires much faster than four-year degree students. Entrepreneurial spirit like of students where, or of young people is at its prime at that age. So to start off your own company, to even just enter the workforce and get a sense of what it is you want to do. The fact that universities have an undecided option, like you can go in and start paying for classes without even knowing what you want to major in or knowing what you want to do, that should be unacceptable to the American people. We should say, no, you cannot pay this kind of money. You cannot go into this kind of debt. If you do not even know what you want to do, if you have no experience, just take your time going into school. You'll be more mature when you go in if you decide that's what you want to do. You'll do the actual reading. You won't be so focused on partying. You'll be a more mature student who can actually get a lot more out of the education, of higher education. And also, you know, don't think that it's the end all be all to get a four-year degree. Like I said, there's plenty of other alternatives that we've seen that pay much better, especially if you want to prioritize family, owning property and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. And Charisse, thank you so much for your research and your insight.
Absolutely. Happy to help.
All right, Madison, thanks so much for that conversation there. I mean, it really is a changing landscape, and there's a lot of narratives out there that have been settled in that maybe people would be wise potentially in certain situations to rethink those old narratives. So appreciate you bringing that one to the podcast today, Madison. That's going to leave us here with time on the pod for one last thing.
Matthew 5:10, it's blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And you just think about the difficulties of persecution, but knowing that there is a reward in the end.
Yeah. Having that eternal perspective, as we often talk about here, this is one of those verses that helps us do that in the midst of intense suffering, especially that people are going through, like we talked about today with Sudan as well. So definitely things we could be praying about for ourselves, for others, and a good spot to leave it here on the Quick Start Podcast. As always, head on over to cbnnews.com for more news from a Christian perspective, and Lord willing, and that creek don't rise. We'll return here tomorrow with more. God bless. We'll see you then.